When you're looking for a new computer or need help with one you already own, call 231-8000 and Madison Computer Works will get things up and running for you. Madison Computer Works, computers that work for you.
Take the scenic drive to the Guitar Oasis Cool in Jefferson County. Jeff's Guitar Clinic, jeffsguitar.com.
Welcome to another podcast. It's LiesOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us now from the Capital Times and the Nation, John Nichols. John, special elections in Wisconsin. These were hard-fought races, not only during the campaign season, but leading up to the actual elections being held.
Yeah, you're exactly right. You know, there's a backstory on all this, and the backstory really begins with the fact that Scott Walker is, you know, the most politicized governor in the history of Wisconsin. The guy literally lives and breathes politics, and frankly, he's on top of things. So late last year, the governor appointed two of his legislative allies to positions in his administration.
To up their pensions.
Well, exactly. It was basically, you know, just a nice thing for them. But he was also doing something outside. He was clearing those seats so that other Republicans could step up and prepare to run for them, because both of those legislators they took out were relatively weak legislators. So, I mean, there was a lot of politics going on. But the key thing that the governor did was announce, you know, literally the end of last year, that he wasn't going to hold special elections for Assembly District 42, which is, you know, north of Madison into the central part of the state, and for State Senate District 1, which is up in the northeastern part of the state, up toward Door County. So I'm just not going to hold special elections. We're going to leave these seats vacant, essentially, for a year, or the better part of a year. And initially, he kind of got away with it, because Wisconsin media is, frankly, very weak. And they were sort of like, the governor said, yeah, it's expensive, and we're not really planning to do anything in 2018. It's an off year, you know what I mean? Legislature won't do anything, so it'd be silly to fill the seats. And that was just accepted for weeks. And you and I and some other folks started saying, hold it, you're going to leave these seats open for the better part of a year? And then a lot of people started to question the absurdity of claiming the legislature wasn't going to do anything. Because, of course, as you know, the legislature was called into special session. It had a lingering session dealing with all sorts of fundamental issues, right? And so the governor lied. There's no nice way to say it. He tried to scam the people of Wisconsin. And finally, legal action.
Those are awfully harsh words, John.
Okay, he fabricated. You know, I mean, but frankly, it was just a flat-out lie. And there's no other way to say it. And unless you think Scott Walker is really, really politically stupid, that he knows nothing about politics at all, he was trying to pull a fast one on the people of Wisconsin. And he got caught out. He got called out. And then people in the districts brought legal action. Eric Holder's group came in to back them up in the courts. And the courts ordered Walker one time, then a second time, and then a third time to hold these special elections. Even then, Walker and his allies in the legislature briefly conspired to change the special election law so that they could get around court orders on it. So they desperately didn't want to hold these elections. And now we know why.
And, of course, they were having trouble getting votes for that. Their own members were rebelling against him.
Well, it was a terrible, terrible move. And the only thing that gave Walker any, you know, kind of heft with his own, even with his own Republicans on this issue, because it was such a bad scam, was that they, in the early part of the year, back in January, lost a key state Senate seat in northwestern Wisconsin in a special election, and then also ran much more poorly than usual in a very Republican seat in the Milwaukee suburbs, and or in the, you know, ring of fire conservative region of the state. And so the signals from January were very bad for the party, and so there was clearly a motivation not to hold these special elections. They were forced to do so. The governor called them. They played out on a relatively fast timeline. Elections were last night, or Tuesday night, and the Republicans held on to an assembly seat, just as they did back in January, you know, a very Republican assembly seat, but their margin was significantly narrowed. But then here's the key one, and the one that mattered, really the only race that fundamentally mattered, which is the state Senate race. The Democrats won the race. A Democrat prevailed. And what that means is, just think about this. After the 2016 election, the Republicans had a 20-13 advantage in the state Senate. It was such an overwhelming advantage that it was almost unimaginable that Democrats could retake the state Senate in 2018. Now, because of two special elections, that advantage is down to an 18-15 advantage, which means that if the Democrats simply flip two seats this fall, and there are certainly two seats they could flip, the Democrats could take the state Senate this year, which literally is something that in November of 2016, I don't think anyone, not even a loyal Democrat, would have suggested was possible.
Right. Well, let's look at the players in the first state Senate district. And of course, the last time a Democrat held the seat, I was about 15. This was before Alan Lissay won that district in 1976, a man by the name of Jerome Martin.
Yep.
Evidently must have retired, you know, before the 1976 election.
He's an old labor Democrat.
Right.
You know,
right.
And remember, that region was changing in a lot of ways. And also, the politics of the country was changing in a lot of ways. And so it did go Republican. The Lissays were a unique family, very politically, you know, kind of maverick family. And they held that seat for a long time.
So, the Democrats recruited a candidate, or somebody recruited a candidate named Caleb Frostman. He's the former economic development director for Door County. And really, Door County came out to vote last night big time. Now, mind you, Door County narrowly went for Donald Trump. Door County sort of has become a swing county. But last night, Door County came out in much larger numbers than the rest of the district. And this is how Frostman won the race.
You're exactly right. And this is something, you know, you realize from our many conversations, I'm going to say something that I don't think you or I have ever said. This is an instance where the Wisconsin Democratic Party did something right. They got a candidate almost from central casting for Northeast Wisconsin, right? Outdoors guy, you know, runs around with a canoe on his head, you know, and just kind of like a perfect fit for a lot of that district. Secondly, he had real standing. He had done economic development. He's got a good background in financial affairs, and so he's a guy who seems very, very stable on the economic side.
Well, he really focused like a laser on economics.
Right, and but he's also a socially moderate liberal guy who, you know, would appeal to Democratic voters on a whole bunch of levels. So he put all the pieces together and ran.
Yeah, he's not Jerome Van Sistine, right? He's not a socially conservative Democrat, which used to represent that area, right?
Yeah, well, that district has a historic sort of old school Democratic tradition, especially around Green Bay. But you know, this guy was social liberal and frankly an economic, you know, I would say common sense Democrat, right? And at a time when Governor Walker's running around giving $4.5 billion, or trying to give $4.5 billion to a Taiwanese corporation, right? Frostman was in many ways even more ideal as a candidate.
The Republicans ran Andre Jacques, or he won a primary.
Not by choice.
Right, right. Now, he is arguably the most socially conservative member of the state assembly. Has pushed for some very radical bills, including ending stem cell research at the University of Wisconsin.
He's also one of the most
anti-labor, right? He really pushed for the end of prevailing wage in Wisconsin, and I think that hurt him last night.
Right. He was also the point person on right to work.
Right to work.
Mm-hmm. And that's a big deal because up in that district, private sector unionism in that region is still quite high as compared to a lot of the rest of the state. And so there was a place, interestingly enough, where Walker's assault on public sector unions back in 2011 certainly was unpopular with a lot of folks, but right to work was actually as unpopular or more unpopular up in that, in parts of that region. So you had a kind of a rare combination of factors that came into play. Also, the fact is that André Jacques was, I would argue, he was not a particularly appealing candidate. He didn't come off as, you know, lovable. As the
right.
Republicans,
this could be the biggest understatement we've ever had on this show, ever.
Well, and the Republicans tried desperately to get another candidate.
Well, they already have somebody lined up against him in a primary ready for the fall.
Right, because he was vulnerable. So you had this kind of perfect storm where things were going right for the Democrats on, you know, the choice of candidates. You had obviously some issues, and I think Foxconn played as an issue. It's at least subtly up there. But then there's this final reality. This is a year when Democrats are motivated to come out and vote. And that meant a huge amount up there. So Democrats finally did something right. They picked a good candidate with a regional base, obviously, in his home county, Door County. But even that wouldn't have been enough if it wasn't for the mood of the year, at least I would argue. If this had just been any year, I think there's still a chance that Jacques would have won that seat. But
mind you, this is a very gerrymandered district.
Well, it's a district that Trump won overwhelmingly.
16 points. Walker won it by 22 points.
Right. So the history there is, you know, 40 years of Republican holding a seat, multiple presidential wins for the Republicans in the district, multiple gubernatorial wins for the Republicans in the district. This just wasn't, it wasn't the place where you were going to have a on-the-margins win. This district wouldn't have even been, I would argue, in the top five of, you know, flippable seats in the Senate.
Although we've seen in moments, in 2006, Ted Zygmunt got elected to that assembly seat, and of course, eventually André Jacques beat him. But, you know, Ted Zygmunt was an old Labor Democrat who got elected, radio personality.
Yep.
So there are moments where that district, at least part of it, will swing.
Well, and I think that underpinning this is the prospect, and this is a very big deal, the prospect of redistricting. Because with a little bit of redistricting, Northeast Wisconsin could have multiple Democratic seats. You know, it's the thing about Northeast Wisconsin at this point is that, you know, kind of radical gerrymandering, some of the most extreme gerrymandering you've seen anywhere in the country, was used to take a region that really was a swing region and make it pretty solidly Republican, with, you know, one concentrated Democratic seat in Green Bay itself. This is an indication of possibilities, and obviously it's a signal of one other thing, too. Caleb Frostman, who won this seat, because of his immense popularity in Door County, if he goes out in the other counties of that district, and remember, he won three of the counties in the district and almost won a fourth. If he goes in the other counties in this district and really pours some energy in over the next few months, I think he's got a potential, no matter how November goes generally, he's one of these guys who might be able to solidify a hard seat, and then with a little bit of fair redistricting, you know, get in a position where he could be in the legislature for a good long while.
I would say that not only because they both won, but for many other reasons, looking at them, how they fit their districts, Patty Shatner and Caleb Frostman are two of the best people as far as candidates to come along in a very long time for Democrats.
Well, can I put something on the mix here for you, right? Neither of these candidates had a history of running in partisan elections. Patty Shatner had been a school board member. But both of these candidates had sort of county jobs, you know, administrative or, you know, they had jobs with real responsibilities. And so they knew a lot of people, but they knew a lot of people in a service capacity, i.e. economic development or, in Shatner's case, medical examiner. And so as a result, they were people that a lot of folks had interacted with, you know, know, in ways that allowed, again, both of these individuals to show their competence, to show their decency, their humanity. And as Democrats look to recruit candidates, that's not a bad model.
We'll talk more with John Nichols next as we do a recap on the special elections, the June special elections in Wisconsin, right here at SliceOffice.com.
Injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh.
When you hire a lawyer to help you with your personal injury, you want to know that you'll have that lawyer's personal attention. With John and I, that's exactly what you'll get. With many firms, the lawyer that you see in the ad is not the lawyer who is going to be representing you in the case.
One of the differences with Mike and my practice is that when you hire us, you'll have us personally involved in your case.
Call injury lawyers Mike Riley and John Walsh at 257-5661 for the personal attention you deserve.
We're back at SliceOffice.com, brought to you by the United Steelworkers. Joining us, John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation. I want to talk a little bit about the other race that happened last night, and that was in South Central Wisconsin into Central Wisconsin. This is kind of a sprawling assembly seat that at one time the district was mainly Columbia County, but gerrymandering takes a little bit of Dane all the way up into Fond du Lac, Green Lake, and I think Marquette County. I mean, it's all over the place. Last night, John Plummer, who is from Lodi, beat Ann Groves Lloyd, also from Lodi. Your thoughts on this race?
Well, this is, I would argue, and you can make a debate. There's another one that kind of stretches across, kind of starts in Dane County and stretches out to the east. But I would argue this may be the most radically gerrymandered legislative seat in the state. It was gerrymandered a good while ago, because the Republican legislator who held it, Keith Ripp, was actually, a well-liked guy in his home area, but by all accounts, not a particularly good candidate. He wasn't particularly effective as a candidate, and he kept coming close to getting beaten in what should have been a pretty Republican district. And so, when redistricting occurred, they basically did a draw where they kind of carved around every city and most of the villages in the district and went for sort of a heavily rural draw. And then they pulled the district all the way over into some of the eastern parts of the state that have very, very socially conservative voters.
This is the Dutch population of the state, Dutch Reformed Calvinists.
Right. And as you know, and you can run the figures as well as I, this is an area where, Democrats, they don't even compete. They get wiped out, historically.
Yeah, and this isn't a recent phenomenon. This goes way back.
Yeah, I think about till 1854. And so, it's what they did was they created a district that was sort of uniquely locked in. And that's an important thing to understand. A lot of times you'll look at the old voting patterns in a district, from recent elections. You'll say, well, Trump did this there, or Walker did this. And, of course, in this 42nd district, Trump won it relatively easily. Walker won it quite easily. But there was an underpinning of that whereas in the Northeast, you had swing voters. In the 42nd, you have very few swing voters. You have a lot more kind of locked-in hardcore Republicans. So even though it's not a particularly, in a presidential election, you don't see a particularly higher Republican vote, the Republicans there, I would argue, are people who just aren't going to switch. So it was always a harder seat. And the Republican won, as you point out. But what's notable is that in 2016, in a race that was, they had a credible candidate in 2016, Democratic candidate, who ran hard and worked the district quite thoroughly, and he had Hillary Clinton and Russ Feingold above him on the ballot. He got, is George Ferder, I think he got about 40% of the vote, right?
He got 37% of the vote this last time. I think it's my understanding he got a little higher the previous time.
Well, let's go with that 37 for a second, though, right? So what that means is that his opponent got, if we're, roughly say his opponent got 63. You're looking there at a 26-point spread for the Republicans in that district. the spread was reduced by Angroves Lloyd down to an 8-point spread. So you 2/3 of the Republican advantage got knocked off in this special election. Another way to look at it, or another way to think about it, is in 42nd District, from the previous election for the seat, the Democrats actually advanced as much, roughly as much, as they did in the first.
And yet it was a little too much to overcome.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Yeah, that's you know, look.
This was the 42nd district race was really vicious.
It was a mean race. It was also a race that had, you know, way too much of a TV overlay on it because because of the way that the redraw was done.
Well, that district is in three media markets.
Right. And so if you had a lot of money to run a lot of negative ads and then do negative mailings, you had, you know, some advantage there. So it was a rough race. But I would also suggest...
Well, now let's look at the positive here, John.
Okay.
The Republicans ran a lot of ads against Angroves Lloyd because they didn't like her behavior on Facebook. They thought she was intemperate and rude and divisive. I am really glad the Republicans are taking a stand against divisiveness, aren't you?
Yep. I think that as they you know, kind of move that forward into 2020 when they take on Donald Trump, it's going to be interesting.
Donald Trump is going to be here for the ribbon cutting for Foxconn here very soon.
I just heard last night there's a lot of people planning to greet him down there.
I'm looking forward to it myself.
Sounds like it's going to be an interesting visit. this is the final thing I just to say on these two races. Here's the important thing to understand. Back in January, when Scott Walker himself sort of really freaked out and said that the January election results were a wake-up call for Wisconsin Republicans, and he and other folks started talking about the possibility of a blue wave sweeping over Wisconsin. The Democrats won a state Senate seat that had historically been Republican, and they substantially narrowed the margin in a state Assembly seat that had been very historically Republican. Last night, the Democrats again won a state Senate seat that had been historically Republican and dramatically narrowed the Republican advantage in a very historically Republican Assembly seat. And so I see this in many ways, what happened here, as a more devastating result. Because after having 6 months of first trying not to hold special elections and then, you know, a lot of time to raise money, pour energy in, you know, take all the steps that you might try to take to secure your turf, Scott Walker still wasn't able to stall that blue wave.
Yeah, and he spent the day up there.
Well, I think he thought he was going to win that seat. You know, this is the state Senate seat. And so I would go so far as to say that what happened last night was a bigger shock than what happened in January. And January was a big shock. But what happened last night was one that I think that Scott Walker and others thought they had spent a lot of time putting the pieces in place to avoid, and they were not able to avoid it.
Before we wrap things up today, I want to ask you about nationally the mood of the electorate. I hate to say this, but I'm going to miss Mark Sanford, congressman from South Carolina. I always thought he was a very unique individual and obviously had some major flaws, and I didn't agree with him on very much, but I thought he was authentic, and I thought he was someone who was relatively honest, and had a real interesting take, and he was a unique individual.
Yeah, he had a big heart. He was really able to love.
Well, putting the Appalachian Trail aside, he was a unique guy.
One of the most interesting people in American politics.
He stood up to the president, and he lost last night.
He stood up, and he lost solely because of that. And you know what? Another reason he lost? This is the interesting thing. We have all sorts of folks, even some of our Republican friends and Democratic friends, who will say, oh, we just need more civility. Mark Sanford was one of the most civil members of Congress. Do you know when Paul Ryan wouldn't go near an open town hall meeting in his district? You know, after Trump was elected, Mark Sanford regularly had outdoor town hall meetings. If the crowd was so big it didn't fit in the room, he'd go outside with them and spend hours answering their questions. He was totally confident in his own skin. He knew who he was. He did break with the president on some things, although he's very, very conservative. But he was also open to talking to people from all perspectives. He was, in many ways, although I disagreed with him ideologically, kind of an ideal member of Congress. He's what a member of Congress should be. His own person, not the tool of special interests, not the tool of hyper-partisanship, open to all people. And he got beat by a candidate who simply said he is not enough of a lockstep Trumpite. And it's even Trump, was out tweeting yesterday in favor of his opponent. This is a really big deal because what it tells you is there is no longer a Republican Party. There is Trump's party. And we are seeing that as one of the deepest underpinnings so far of the 2016 primaries, not just in South Carolina, but in Alabama and in other states. Your loyalty to Trump is becoming the number one test of whether you can be a Republican nominee. And I think that's a devastating reality. But it also tells us one thing. Don't lie to yourself about November. The only issue that will be universal in November, that's going to be everywhere and going to be real, I mean, unless we get into a war or, have an economic...
You mean with Canada?
Well, I got a theory on Canada in a second, but if we don't get in a war or have an economic meltdown, the single biggest issue is going to be Donald Trump. Republicans are, the way that the Republicans are going to rally their base is loyalty to Donald Trump. And the way Democrats are going to rally their base is opposition to Donald Trump. It shouldn't be this way. It should be broader. It's healthier to be broader, and frankly, I think it's necessary. But the signal from these primaries is that there's a Trump overlay that's huge.
Now, your theory,
Canada, the answer for Canada is this is very, very simple. Justin Trudeau's obviously got a bad relationship with Trump. What he needs to do is contact Trump and say he's ready to negotiate the long-standing war between Canada and the United States.
Well, Canada claims, even though they weren't a country at the time, that they defeated the United States in the War of 1812.
Wait, see, this is the key. I don't think Trump's going to know one way or the other. And so I think all Trudeau has to do is kind of make a credible case on the phone that the U.S. and Canada are still technically at war, and that if Trump comes up to Ottawa, they can settle it. Because it's clear that if Trump thinks he's settling a war or something like that, then he's ready to go.
Those were some pretty remarkable pictures from North Korea. From Singapore with the North Korean dictator. And
I think just from a fashion standpoint, it was fantastic.
I never thought I'd hear an American president say that Kim Jong-un or any of the Kim family loved their country, because that's a strange way of showing love, my friend.
I'm going to go so far as to say that that's a debatable point.
John Nichols from the Capital Times and The Nation, thanks for coming to SliceOffice.com.
SliceOffice.com.
Thanks a million.
Bye-bye.
Making stuff matters, because when we make things in America, America makes it. American workers and families make it. Our communities make it. Consider this. For every one manufacturing job in our communities, 5 more jobs are supported. Manufacturing jobs pay an average of 10 to 50% more than service sector jobs. That allows working families to support their local businesses, schools, emergency services, and more. Creating 2.5 million new manufacturing jobs would mean at least $100 billion for our economy over the next decade. Domestic manufacturing is the green economy. It's among the cleanest, most efficient, and productive in the world. That's why the United Steelworkers and our more than 1 million members and retirees are fighting so hard to protect and grow manufacturing. Because making stuff really does matter. Join our fight. Visit usw.org and like us at facebook.com/steelworkers. Support American manufacturing. Buy American. Buy Union.